You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is casual Friday, August 22nd, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It is casual Friday. Joining me on the program, as we do every casual Friday, Cliff Schechter. And then, I don't know if he's prepared to give me a film recommendation, but candidate for governor of New York State, one of three, or I should say, in the Democratic primary, Randy Credico will be joining us. Also on the program today, the UN issues a report with the latest numbers of casualties in the Syrian civil war, 190,000 people dead. Also on the program today, 18 Palestinians reportedly executed by Hamas for collaborating with Israel as missile fire continues from Israel into Gaza and rockets from Gaza into Israel. Pennsylvania Governor Corbett not invited to the Labor Day parade, I should say, or party for that matter, in Pittsburgh. Maybe gets no invitations ever. Rand Paul agrees with the prospect of sending home Dreamer kids, or I should say, sending Dreamer kids not home, deporting them to countries where many of them have barely ever lived in any part of their life. All that and more on today's program. Just wanted to say a couple of things. We've gotten a lot of really nice response of our shows the past couple of days, and I wanted to thank you. And particularly, we got a lot of good response about the audio that we played in the fun half. It wasn't particularly fun half of the Kajami Powell killing. I know that we started to see that that video on TV last night. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about that today. I mean, there seems to be a widely shared belief that police followed police protocol when they shot this man less than 25 seconds into literally getting out of their cars. But if so, I mean, it only, I think, highlights what I was saying yesterday, that we're spending money with the police in the wrong places. And instead of sending them billions of dollars of up-armored vehicles, we should be spending it on better training so that there can be policies that are more humane. But we shall see. I mean, one of the legacies, hopefully, of Ferguson will be some type of reform, but don't hold your breath. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Casual Friday, and if you are a regular listener of the program, you know what happens next. It's this.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's Cliff Schechter, our regular Friday guest, our only week in, week out regular guest, Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff.
Sammy, it does make me feel special in many ways, I want you to know.
Oh.
I do appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. You're getting a little tingling on your leg?
Oh, I get that same tingle up my leg that Rich Lowry gets every time he sees Sarah Palin.
There you go.
So starbursts are flying across the room. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no, of course I do. Now, Cliff, obviously, you know, the big story for the past couple of weeks, and I was on vacation last week into this one, has been...
So you and Obama playing golf while stuff's happening.
Yeah, I don't even want to even, like, I almost didn't even want to even mention that. But, I mean, that's, you know, it's summer. And so when people are just desperately looking for things to talk about, I guess. And so the golf stuff comes up. But it's really this, I feel like the past 4 or 5 weeks, have been, it's just been very,
it has not been a quiet August.
No. And it's certainly not been a fun one in many respects, but you know, you wrote a piece, about Ferguson, and you know, we've talked about it, over the past couple of days here, and there's still a lot of, things to talk about. And, there's so many different angles, to this story. But you wrote a great piece. I think it was in the Daily Beast, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
And why isn't the NRA defending Ferguson's blacks? I mean, you lay out the case quite well that, in some respects, what we saw in terms of the response to the protest in Ferguson was the NRA's. It's as if every dystopic projection that the NRA has been talking about played itself out on the streets of Ferguson's.
Yeah, I mean, look, everything that they've warned about, that they warned all their sort of their closest adherents that the government's going to come in. They talk about sort of people dressed in black body armor, check, right? attacking you, going door to door. And in this particular case, we know that they actually went to people's yards and shot tear gas into them. If not, I don't know. I haven't heard of any cases where they might have shot bullets purposely into people's houses, but I wouldn't be shocked. They certainly shot tear gas into people's yards. I mean, they obviously came way, way over-militarized into a situation with basically tank-resembling cars, sound cannons, rubber bullets, tear gas, mace. I mean, you know, not to mention then the 50-caliber rifles they set on top of their tanks that they had trained on people, which I'm not sure how they think people are supposed to react when the slip of one guy's finger means you're dead. And you know, the NRA yells about this stuff all the time, and they call themselves, which is sort of laughable, the longest-standing civil rights organization, which is a lie, like most things they say, because they were started initially by two union generals who wanted to make sure that their soldiers would shoot better in the next war because their shooting performance was so bad. They didn't start talking about the Second Amendment in their way that they do until about 30, 40 years ago. But I digress. Since then, they've called themselves, you know, this civil rights organization. Well, I mean, is there anything more civil rightsy than this? Meanwhile, they haven't mentioned anything. Meanwhile, up on their website, they had, you know, other just terrible cases of civil rights abuse, like a guy getting thrown out of Great Adventure in New Jersey. I used to go to that place as a kid. I don't know if you go there, Sam, but no. I used to when I lived in the New York area. It was fun. Getting kicked out because he had a shirt with a gun on it and mentioned something about firing back at people. And they, as a private entity, chose to not want somebody wearing that there. So they kicked him out and told him he can come back with another shirt. Well, that clearly was a much bigger violation than somebody being shot down the street and then this attack on civilians. So I also went into, look, the NRA's board is filled with Ted Nugent-like white guys that have made every racist comment. You can imagine a lot of them supported apartheid in the 80s. A lot of them have come out and made statements that the South should have won the Civil War. It goes on and on. I mean, quite clearly. And then I mentioned the fact that when I went to their convention in Indianapolis, which I did and wrote about it, like, there, you know, I think the way I put it was, I think you see more African Americans in your average episode of The Dukes of Hazzard. I mean, there were no black people there. So, but, you know, I think obviously the NRA is an organization that I know well. I work against. They're one that I could write about. But, you know, it goes for other of these types of organizations, too, on the right, because you've got the American Civil Rights Union that's supposed to be like the ACLU of the right. Where are they? Right. I mean, all these groups that claim that they're that are, you know, for the liberties of the right. And really, I just feel like, and I've said this, I think I've said this on your show before, and I should say it again, which is really when you have these sort of aggrieved white organizations talking about things that they believe, the NRA, the Chamber of Commerce, whatever it is, you should really just, I think, insert at the end for white people, kind of like you do in bed when you go to, like, you know, you used to go to a Chinese restaurant.
Right.
And you get the fortune cookies and you say whatever, whatever, in bed. You should just insert at the end for white people, because that's what this really is a black versus white issue. Anyone who doesn't understand that is either ignorant or just doesn't care. And that's what it's about. So that's what I wrote about. But I think that's a broader issue, Sam, than just the NRA. I think it goes to a lot of the reactions, differing reactions you see from members of our, I mean, even Rand Paul, it took him forever to write. You know, if that had been an attack on, you know, Cliven Bundy's ranch, Rand Paul would have been out there standing next to Cliven Bundy. He would have written that, you know, and a bunch of people have been killed there. He would have written that op-ed the minute it happened. He'd be calling for legislation. So for people to act like it was some big act that he wrote reluctantly a couple of days later, what was a pretty good op-ed overall about militarization of police and that kind of thing. Well, that's great. But you can tell when someone's heart is in something or and when they're just doing it because they kind of have to.
I mean, he's you know, and we'll talk about Rand Paul in a couple of minutes. I mean, he's on this tour to expand the playing field, and I appreciate that he wrote that. I mean, I think the militarization of the police is a real problem, and
absolutely,
And I will say that there are a couple of people, obviously, who've been writing about this sort of from that ilk or slightly, you know, a guy like Balco, and we had him on, and, you know, I don't.
But he's a legit, not a partisan guy who claims he's a libertarian because it's better branding.
Right.
He's a legit libertarian. So let me make that sort of distinction, because I don't want it to come off like I don't think militarization. I think it's a huge problem and plays a big role here. It's just that in this case, because of who the people are who are being attacked and who the people are who are doing the attacking, the whole what's called the civil liberties right, from Rand Paul to others on the right who call themselves libertarians, who run out every time there's an issue of someone's gun being taken away or anything where people who are white might be the victim. And they've all either had nothing to say or it's been enormously reluctant. There has been some intellectual consistency from people like Balco and Reason Magazine. I've seen some things. It's not to say that no libertarians are consistent, but the ones who are libertarian Republicans who are white, nada. They've either done it reluctantly or not at all.
Indeed. And, you know, I want to break this down as we talk about this over the course of the week. I mean, it has become more peaceful in Ferguson, and organizing still continues. Protests still continue. But as looking back on just the past couple of weeks, I mean, it seems to me we have multiple issues in this, and it's interesting to me the ones that get the most attention. You know, we have the initial shooting, which of course is indicative of a problem that we have, it seems like, around the country. This weekend, in Staten Island, I believe tomorrow there's going to be, and people are predicting up to 15,000 people. It could be more. A protest march in recognition of Eric Garner's killing by the New York City Police Department. But we have these killings that have taken
place.
And there
was for people who don't know, also the Justice Department. I can't think of his name, has opened now a case into the shooting here in the Walmart of an innocent African-American male. I can't think of his name, who just walked in and picked it, was looking at a BB gun, apparently waving it around too much, so they shot him.
John Crawford.
Right, well, thank you for that. Well, you know, you can be white and 18 years old or however old, and an idiot like that kid decides to march through the streets of Aurora with an assault weapon after what happened in Aurora, Colorado, just 2 years ago. And, of course, he gets a nice talking to.
Right. And so we have that problem of the way that the police and I don't know if it's subsidiary, but a subset of that problem, or perhaps the greater context for that problem, is policing in general in black and minority communities across the country, which involves things like stop and frisk and just sort of the general harassment and us v them relationship between the police and African American communities in this country. And then we have the response to the protests, which raise another series of issues involving the militarization of the police, the diminishment of rights for people to protest. I mean, there was a whole, just a massive amount, as far as I'm concerned, of constitutional rights violations that were going on in those responses, ranging from
and journalists too, of course.
Journalists, including the journalists, and other issues of police accountability, with this practice of having police go out there with absolutely no identification so that they can't be held accountable for their actions unless someone's lucky enough to have captured their actions on videotape.
if you think about it, they scored a hat trick in violating three of the five precepts of the First Amendment. They attacked people for assembling, right? They attacked people for just in general for their various speech, and they attacked the press.
Yep.
I mean, you know, all they missed was petition and religion. But who knows? Maybe those are, you know, I'm being facetious. But, I mean, it's amazing, the civil, the violation of constitutional rights there. It was unbelievable. I would add the point, though, you know, you talk about the militarization of the police, you know, and this has been particularly dangerous, obviously, in what's going on with Homeland Security post-2001. But I would call it, like, the overall militarization of our society in general. I mean, I'll tell you, you know, when I first, and I'll be dating myself now, but who cares, when I first went, for the first time I ever went abroad when I was 15 years old, and I went, I had a friend who had like a family of Swedish extract, and we flew through Frankfurt to get to Stockholm, Sweden. I was 15. So, you know, we're talking like mid to late 80s here. And I remember in the airport seeing the guards walking around with machine guns, assault weapons, whatever it was I had. I'd never seen that before. Same thing when I went to Spain, even by the time I got to college and I went abroad, studied abroad, and I went to Spain, and some of the guys guarding the Prado had them. And I was like, wow, let me give you something that just for people to put this in perspective, and some of you may have seen this. Jennifer Lee of The Economist tweeted this out, that Darren Wilson shot more bullets than the entire British police force did last year.
Right.
Think about that.
Yes. He shot... he fired more bullets than were fired by the entire British police force in a year.
Yep. The police in England and Wales went 2 years at one point without fatally shooting anyone. That is the cost of the militarization of our police, of civilians, of what I talk about a lot, the just unbelievable way in which we've loosened our gun laws. In the 70s and 80s in this country, I mean, assault weapons were not available to regular people. Concealed carry only existed in a couple of states. Most people don't know this. They sort of think that we were like this forever. We were not. And older people will remember that. And now it's just normal. People, you know, I mean, it's not normal to see someone open carrying, but certainly it's become a normalized thing for people to concealed carry any kind of handgun they feel like, to own assault weapons in their home, and then for gangs to have access to them, which in the end, of course, leads police to want to use higher firepower.
Well, right, that is one of the biggest, you know, the so-called unintended consequences. I mean, this week we saw the SWAT. There's apparently a national SWAT association on Capitol Hill lobbying to make sure that the police departments continue to get these militarized toys, and the biggest excuse is not terrorism, of course, because you know this is just absurd.
There's lots of terrorism in Ferguson and you know small towns in the South and Midwest.
It's a function of look the bad guys out there are getting these weapons, so we need to be able to provide overwhelming force. And
it was like when I was doing, you know, when I was doing some, at one point, some work for the group Flyers Rights. I was doing some public relations work for them. And it was right when Michael Chertoff went and started his nice security company. And they sold all these scanners, you know, to airports, which, of course, have become militarized to such a ridiculous degree. And they knew at that point that they wouldn't even work. But, hey, it was Michael Chertoff, and he had connections. So they spent God knows how much money on purchasing these things. In other words, as long as you know the right people, I mean, not that this is going to shock anybody listening to this show, but even when it comes to militarizing cops, militarizing certain places we used to go to, like our airports, and I'm not saying we don't need any security there, but obviously we've gone way overboard. These things after a while become normalized and they change culturally. And then throw in sort of a culture that has changed, and you know, I like to call it the stand your ground culture, which is since about the time of the Magna Carta, we've believed that the only time you should be shooting somebody is if your life is in danger. But we now have mainstream groups, or groups that are at least are considered mainstream, from talk radio on the right to the NRA to all these others, that basically say have changed that so that if you can say you legitimately have any fear for your safety, you can shoot somebody. It's not that someone – you don't have to prove somebody was trying to kill you. You just have to prove that you had a fear that they were trying to kill you. I mean, we've just changed the rules. And so why wouldn't that change for police too? They're part of our society. Why wouldn't they get the right to shoot in more situations? And I believe if you'd look at the numbers, you'd see they have. Certainly SWAT teams have changed. And have SWAT teams doing drug busts to knock your door down for smoking pot because you lived in the wrong neighborhood in the 70s and 80s. They've only been around for 40 years. It's ridiculous. It's affected, I think, all parts of our society. And of course, as like with everything else, who's gonna bear the brunt of that cost? It's going to be people that are poorer and who are minorities and who are disenfranchised. They're not going to Scarsdale, New York, and knocking doors down with a SWAT team.
And, you know, I got to say that, you know, obviously there's been a failure of national leadership, I think, to address the issues. And, you know, fortunately, in some areas, we're seeing some reforms. We've seen some mitigation of stop and frisk in New York. So, I mean, there's been a failure to address the relationship between police and black people in this country. And that has been ongoing. But there was also I was just struck by the failure to address in terms of national leadership, the failure to address the response here, you know, of police. And to the extent that it was covered by the press, there was, you know, I kept like, you know, there's a couple of things that stand out with me about this is that, you know, the idea that nobody's talking about some type of federal legislation saying police officers need to identify themselves. I mean, you know, I think there's been at least, and I don't know that we're there yet, but the idea of wearing body cams, which I think is crucial.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk. I think that's one great solution to this. But I think if you look at it, the way we looked at it back in the 60s and 70s, you know, when Miranda came around, you know, we clearly need some more rules and placed upon police about what they can do and when they can do it. And I get it that a lot of these guys are out there and they're first in the line of fire and they fear for their lives. And that, again, is a failure of our society because we allow all the bad guys to get all the guns. Which, frankly, you know, some of us have been trying to lay that blame at the NRA and the feet of scared politicians for a while. And they should be blamed because I understand why the police in this country versus England, you know, Britain and, you know, England and Wales don't have that fear. They don't think they're going to go up to somebody and knock on their window because they're speeding and the guy's going to pull a gun on them. It changes the way, but even with that said, you know, there has to be a very clear line that you can't fire at somebody who's running away from you. You just can't. You certainly can't shoot to kill, and you can't be firing at somebody ever who's unarmed. And, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I mean, being a policeman comes with some parts of the job. When you've got four guys, like what happened in St. Louis the other day, because a guy pulls a knife, you don't get to shoot him six times or whatever. That's just not, you know, I mean, look, I haven't served on the force. I don't know, but I would think there could be nuance. I would think that policemen can learn how to, you know, I don't know, shoot for the legs if they have to protect themselves. And I mean, when you shoot somebody six times and one of those bullets goes into the top of their head, like in the case in Ferguson, so that he obviously was falling forward, already falling down, and you were still shooting, that's a serious problem. That to me is murder, is what that is, plain and simple.
And I think
it should never happen.
And the reality is that I don't know that we're going to see you know a conviction in this instance. I mean, at least you know at the and that's you know I mean that's hopefully there will be there is some mechanism. But again, you know, I don't know if they're going to listen to the witnesses. I don't know what kind of and I hope McCullough steps down at the very least so that there is a perception that you don't have somebody who's starting off with his thumb on the scales. But and then, you know, one of the other things that struck me in terms of the coverage of all this is that it really did focus. You know, there was some very good media reports out there, and there were moments where, you know, I think it was Jake Tapper, you know, sort of looked across the lines and said, like, why is this? Why are they here? Why are the cops dressed like this? And then we hear reports of Molotov cocktails, but frankly, you know, I have not seen any evidence of the Molotov cocktails, and I find it very hard to believe that the cops didn't have video cameras out there as well that were ongoing.
Well, and not to self promote too much, and I'm not promoting me, but an entity that I am a part of, but we ACT Radio, We worked first with Credo and now with Color of Change, and we've had people on the street there since a couple days after it broke out. And one of our guys, you know, who's just an amazingly courageous guy, Dante Barry, who's African American. I mean, he had a gun trained on him at one point. A cop actually literally put a gun towards him. It's on film to tell him to get back. That's the policeman who's now been relieved of duty.
Okay.
If you saw that from the last few days.
Yeah.
That was our guy. He was pointing his gun at, and it was a very big gun, and threatening to kill. You know, and our guy said they did not see there any Molotov cocktail.
Well, I haven't heard reports of anyone. I mean, I have not heard, and if people have heard this, you know, by all means, send us an email or, you know, IM us with a link. But I have not heard one single person confirm the existence of Molotov cocktails outside of an announcement by the police that they were there. And it gets reiterated and reiterated. And honestly, at this
point, I'm sure it appears on Fox, kind of like the orbital fracture that didn't happen.
And I know that the friendly Captain Johnson, who's getting, you know, much applaud. It seems to me this guy is very good at public relations, but there's also, you know, I have seen footage of like him just walking through and saying to his lieutenants, you know, arrest that reporter. I mean, and if they're doing that with the reporters, you know, that I'm just very skeptical, and there does not seem to have been any type of leadership coming from national leaders. And I include Democrats with this, too. There's a lot of like, this is wrong and we should be doing a general sort of like hoping that you remain calm. But if it doesn't come from the feds at this point, where is it going to come from? I mean, if it's not coming from the press isn't maintaining some type of skepticism like, hey, you know, because we now know at the very least that in Ferguson, they haven't done a report. They haven't even written up a report, supposedly, on the shooting.
They let the guy's body
Brown.
Stay out in the street for about 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean,
if that doesn't remind people of a lynching,
I just think that there's not been enough skepticism by all involved. And you know, there was an interesting piece by a guy who was a stringer, a freelance for Al Jazeera, basically saying like I couldn't hang out there anymore and cover this because. And this is something that I noticed, too.
Yeah, he criticized other reporters.
Look, there's definitely a quality to this of like, you know, and I was talking to Professor Eddie Gloud about it earlier. There's a certain quality about there's a conflict porn attitude towards this. And there's a lot more reporting, I think, that needs to be done. And to get into the nuances here. And of course, if it. You know, I get if it bleeds, it leads. I get that. At the end of the day, there's, you know, just not been enough skepticism. Like, hey, if there were Molotov cocktails, my understanding of what a Molotov cocktail does is that when the bottle full of lit gasoline lands, it creates a fireball. And I don't know how this has not been captured on video. Like, it just seems to me you've got a million video cameras there. And this is what we keep hearing over and over again to justify. The only thing I've seen a video of is of a flying plastic bottle of water that was then an excuse to lob tear gas into crowds.
That's what our guys were saying, by the way, over there. They were saying people did throw water bottles, but they were water bottles. They were not Molotov cocktails. Big, big difference.
And even if they're rocks at that point, I mean, if you're going to put these cops in military gear and you're going to have the National Guard there, then they should be able to deal with rocks coming. And I can understand an onslaught of rocks means that you have to go into. But I'm sorry. I mean, to go racing into the crowd like this, I just find it very problematic, and there has not been enough skepticism by the press about these justifications. I don't know.
But some of it's because, you know, they've done, looking at it from the PR point of view, they've done a good job of feeding stuff to the kind of trashy people. Fox, who reported this orbital fracture based upon what that moron Jim Hoff, who I think has also been dubbed the dumbest person on the internet, which seems about right, Gateway Pundit, he goes by, who is a right-wing loon. And, you know, he had a picture of an orbital fracture from the University of Iowa that he put up on his site. He just happened to erase that off of it. I mean, it was complete fraud, you know, but then they shared that around and Fox wrote about it. And once Fox did, other mainstream media outlets reported it like it was truth.
And I think, this is also what is sort of, I think, problematic about the way that the protests are covered, it shows the need for organizing, because it seems to me, and of course I am not there, and this is, you know, I'm not a black person, and I am not subjected on a daily day. I mean, my life is not in any way implicated by these issues of having to tell my children, you know, be careful when you see police officers.
Right.
Behave a certain way when you see
children,
police officers. I don't
know. We have to tell them enough stuff to be concerned about.
Right. I mean, right? And
I can't even imagine having that.
And
you know?
I don't have to deal with the fact I didn't have to go through my teens and my early 20s with this sense of, like, man, I'm going to be harassed on a regular basis. Or if I'm driving a nice car, I can expect that. In taking into account my socioeconomic class, when I'm driving around my dad's Datsun 240 SX, whatever it was,
that must have been awesome.
That it was actually pretty awesome at the time.
Unlike you, Sam, I wasn't a model child. So on top of that, I did some things here and there. They weren't good, you know. I mean, I didn't do anything serious. There were certainly no felonies, but I did some things. And my guess is that if I looked different, things perhaps could have turned out differently.
That's right. Michael was making the same point the other day, and you know, we got an email from a member who grew up in St. Louis, and he told of two different stories, but one was where he was completely out of his mind. I think it was, I can't remember what he said, on acid and vodka with three other guys in the car. They drove down the wrong way street in downtown St. Louis, right by a cop. The cop puts on his lights, chases him down. The guy gets out of his car, gives the cop his license, says, "Oh, I'm lost, officer. I don't know where to go." And the cop was just like, "Don't worry, you're in the wrong neighborhood," and escorts them out of the neighborhood. And the guy's out of his gourd. And, you know, like, I think back when I was in high school, I had similar instances, not quite that extreme. But I can tell you that when I was younger in New York City, I got written up for a couple of infractions that I know that if I was African-American, I would have been far more severe.
Exactly.
Far more.
I didn't do anything as serious as what that guy's talking about. But yeah, you know, a city like New York, I drank underage, absolutely. And I know for a fact, because, you know, I just think of, for example, the police showing up and busting a couple bars where they're, you know, we weren't like 12, but we were 17, right, 18, drinking there. And I know for a fact that if it hadn't been a bunch of, like, you know, white kids in polo shirts,
right,
they would, "Oh, yeah, you guys, you shouldn't do this. Tisk, tisk." You know, it would have turned out differently,
but
it would be my guess.
And so my point is that these protests, it seemed to me, come out of an ongoing frustration and anger about not just about Michael Brown's killing, but Michael Brown's killing is an example of, and the most egregious of types of examples,
yep,
of what this community faces, day in, day out. What is it? $320. $320 and three warrants issued per household in Ferguson.
Yeah, I just saw that article too. The three warrants and whatever per household in Ferguson. Give me a break.
And this is at about about average crime rate in Ferguson. And so,
and that's the other thing which I wrote about in the piece I wrote, which is how out of proportion all this insanity is, considering we have the lowest crime rate in a generation.
Yes.
All this has been going on. The NRA has been preaching fear so people get more guns. We've been militarizing our police forces. We've been doing all this as the crime rate has been going down.
And
it's crazy.
And what the right does, and what I think the, sort of the press does too on some level, is they make it about exclusively about Michael Brown, so that in their framing, the idea that this guy supposedly has a fractured orbital eye socket, whatever it is, even though it's quite clear that any interaction that happened between them took place well before the cop shot Michael Brown six times. John Gibson tweeting out pictures of just a random black guy and then following up with, the issue of Michael Brown supposedly shoplifting cigarillos or whatever it is as being some type of mitigating factor completely allows the framing to not address this ongoing problem. And it is it's incredibly frustrating to watch this issue, because we know that maybe it's going to be in 3 months, maybe it's going to be in 2 months, maybe in 6 months or 8 months, we're going to see another situation like this. And so when people protest tomorrow in Staten Island in March because of Eric Garner, it is really about not just about the killing of this guy. It is also about the relationship where you have a whole class of people, a whole group of people who are deemed to be criminal by their very nature of who they are, regardless of what they do. And that seems to be a problem that this country cannot address and cannot even
acknowledge. And that's the thing we won't get past. That is exactly it. That's, people just figured, you know, once civil rights were passed and voting rights and these things, some of these things which we've gone backwards on, like voting rights, but you know, okay. But to then allow the sort of the criminalization of people who have not done anything, as well as we haven't even gotten to the underlying economic issues here too, which were never addressed. Never have been addressed, that a group of people who for hundreds of years were brought here involuntarily, you know, built the South, families were split up, and then it's just like, all right, you're free, figure it out for yourself, not to mention for 100 years of after that, during Jim Crow, we're almost enslaved in some places again, literally. And then, you know, okay, well, now you can't do it anymore, figure it out for yourself. And that none of that's ever been addressed. I mean, you know, we'll keep pumping money into the Defense Department, spending almost $1 trillion a year when you throw wars and everything else. But nothing has ever been done to address the fact that a group of people were just systematically, you know, they had their labor robbed from them, were treated inhumanely for hundreds and hundreds of years. Yeah. And I mean, that is here too. And that's not going to be fixed when the police don't come in the neighborhood to try to be friends and get to know people, but come in the neighborhood dressed in freaking, you know, body armor with an assault rifle trained on them. That's not how you lighten tensions and get to, I mean, there's just so many problems there. And we haven't even gotten to like the conspiratorial part of it, which isn't really conspiratorial, which is because we've seen this stuff, which is the private prison organizations. And the fact that some of their, you know, presentations have been released where they've been for, you know, passing increased laws that will increase incarceration rates, like the anti-immigration law in Arizona. I mean, they had a whole damn presentation on that so they could throw more people of color in jail and make more money.
Well, Cliff, we could obviously talk longer about this, but sadly, we are out of time. We'll have to pick up on some of this stuff next week, buddy.
Yeah, let's hope that some of it's gotten better by then. Yes. But we shall. Thanks for having me on, as always, buddy.
Cliff Schechter, folks. Thanks, Cliff. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Randy Credico. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program satirist and candidate for governor in the Democratic primary, which is taking place September 9th in New York State, Randy Credico. Randy, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to be on the Sam Seder Majority Report show.
So, Randy, now you're out at City Hall, you just told me, shaking hands, doing the politician thing.
I'm down here in, by City Hall doing the retail politics side of this race.
All right,
shaking
well,
hands, giving out flyers, that type of thing.
All right. Well, first off, let's address you've had quite a week, it seems. First off, let's address what took place. Where was it up? I don't know.
Last
what's
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Well, not this Wednesday, about 9 days ago.
Okay. All right. So so tell us what happened. You were up near Van Cortlandt Park, yeah?
Right. I was taking the one train up to Cortlandt Park where I was being transferred by a friend up to White Plains, where I was meeting a journalist by the name of Phil Reisman, who writes for the Journal. He was doing a profile on me for the next day. But en route, I stopped at the Cortlandt Park, jumped off the train. Now, there's been a lot of controversy within NYPD here, particularly what happened in Staten Island with this guy Eric Garner and what happened to the guys who filmed the killing of Eric Garner. Well, I always go around my video camera. And I just couldn't pass up the moment. I saw three guys. I assumed, but wasn't sure if they were police officers, rousting, not physically, but rousting mentally, some older black man sitting on a bench between the uptown and downtown trains. So I started taking pictures of it, which showed that they were not exposing their badges. So if they were, and they were cops, and they were supposed to show their badges, so they broke the law right there. Now the guy starts videotaping me. One of the officers still has not exposed his badge, and some trash talk ensues. He gets into my face at point blank, which is totally illegal for them to videotape me if they are cops unless I'm a subject of an investigation. So the guy got right into my face. I didn't back down. I just looked at him. He looked at me, and he says, "You got to move 15 feet. I said, "What do you mean 15 feet? That's not in the guy." And then he just arrested me right then. I ended up spending 28 hours 4 hours or 5 hours in the local precinct, which was in the subway, in the belly of the subway beast, and then transferred a one-hour odyssey. It was worse than the Jode family going to California by the time I got to central booking in the Bronx with my face getting bloody. They kept stopping and stopping and stopping real hard on the brakes. And then I went through central booking in the Bronx, which is worse than a Honduran. Think of Midnight Express with Brad Davis, that kind of jail with subhuman conditions, squalor galore. And I spent, and they slowed down the information to the district attorney. They slowed it down. They didn't give it to him for another 20 hours. So I had to stand up in this stench, this filthy stench, for the next 20 hours, standing up the whole time. I don't even want you to know. You'd never want your kid or anyone that you love to be in one of these jails. Subhuman, as I said. And so they charged me with 3 counts of menacing the police with an umbrella. Like I was chasing them with an umbrella. Guys with Glocks, I'm going to chase them with an umbrella. As trigger-happy as NYP is, I'm going to, like, flash an umbrella, brandish an umbrella. I had an umbrella in my left hand because it was raining, but I was using my right hand to videotape them. And then they got me for obstruction of government activity. And of course, their favorite, resisting arrest, as if I tried to run away and resist arrest. So I'm facing, like, years in jail at this point.
And so what happens next now? Do you have a court date?
I won the primary. The next date is September, October 2nd is my next court date, but you have motion schedules in between. I'm facing serious charges, but they're all trumped up. Police always exaggerate. It's like, we were doing comedy at comics, at stand-ups. Their first night in comedy, they had resumes 8 pages long. Well, it's one of those type of operations where they just toss on the charges as if I'm Hannibal Lecter here, and they're the ones who are guilty. The judge let me out on an OR. Oh, by the way, they had me on a warrant, too. They said there's a warrant, and there was one for a fellow by the name of Randy Gretico with a G, and they used that as the basis to arrest me.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, they knew I was a Democratic candidate for governor. They knew that. I told them. I said, if you're going to treat me this way, and then when I was in the holding cell, these guys came in, flipped me the bird over and over again. Various guys would come in and take photos of me as if I was the elephant man.
They were taking pictures of you in, in holding?
In the cell.
Jeez.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
this is a rogue force. This is a rogue force that... totally out of control. It's like one of those Italian armies in the city-states back in the 19th century that just roam around and loot, you know?
All right. Well, I mean, so let's talk about other things that you're doing. Obviously, you're running for governor in the Democratic primary. And, you know, you and I obviously have talked in the past about Andrew Cuomo. Since that time that you've been on, he has gotten in a lot more hot water. A lot of his corruption is coming out. A lot of his strong arm tactics. He's still doing. Well, we don't know really what the polls like. Nobody seems to be polling this race. But I wanted to talk about there's another candidate in the race, I think, since the last time we spoke. And when we talked about booking you on this date, we weren't sure if there would be another candidate. Zephyr Teachout, who's also been on this program at least once, she is now qualified for the ballot. She's actually going to be on the top of the ballot. You have not been invited to the debates, is my understanding.
Well, they don't want me to debate. I debated her the other day, by the way. I debated her the other day, and I blew her away because she just doesn't know New York. She's a nice woman. She doesn't know. She's flashing around Teddy Roosevelt as the greatest governor who governed for, you know, less than 2 years in this state. A horrible governor, and he may have been okay with trust when he was president, but he also responsible for the massacre in the Philippines. So I had to, you know, give her a little New York history, and, you know, she doesn't know that much about it. And it's really one of those things where somebody hits the lottery to get the kind of publicity she's getting. It wasn't based on her record as a, you know, she's a law professor, and not her record in New York State and her knowledge of New York State, which I've been here for 37 years, and I still am uncomfortable calling myself a New Yorker. A lot of people don't consider me one, but she's a nice, smart law professor, and I have not been invited. They don't want me on because I do so well, because I have chops. You know what I mean? I used to work strip joints. I've been on the Tonight Show 30 years ago. I know how to, something about public speaking, and I can tell anecdotes. I do impressions. They're afraid I might do that. But I'm not, right now, have not been invited, but there's not going to be a debate without me. I can tell you that. I'm quite confident that if there's a debate, I will be on the debate. You see, for New York One, which is Time Warner, which is corporate news, to say you can't debate with us, that's as bad as them complaining about Cuomo not wanting her in the primary.
Right. I mean, now, do you think Cuomo is going to agree to debate her or no?
No, he'll, if it's three-way, he will. He's not going to do it. He's, you know, he'll show that he's into democracy. He's going to say, yes, let all the candidates that got, like me, getting 25,000, mostly African-Americans in the project who signed my petition to get on the ballot, they have a voice that needs to be heard. We got the homeless that I support, that I go into shelters. They've got to be heard. I got homeless veterans. They've got to be heard, you know? There are people out there that don't have any money to contribute to this campaign because they don't, or they're imprisoned. I represent a constituency out here that needs to be heard. And we're not expecting to win this thing, but I'm going to give them a voice for the next 2.5 weeks. And that includes in the debates. And I plan to be in the debates.
Well, and I got to tell you, Randy,
if
I mean,
there
that's,
is a debate. If there is a debate.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, that's why I'm happy to have you on, because I do think that you, you're out there running on behalf, and that your supporters do deserve a voice in this. Now, I got to tell you, I got to be honest. I'm going to vote in the Democratic primary, and right now I'm leaning towards voting for Teach Out because basically I want to take as much of a chunk out of Andrew Cuomo as possible.
Well, you can do it either way, though. You can, either one of us, it's the combined total against him. You know, it's a combined total. If he gets X amount of votes and we get X amount of votes between us, it's that combined total that people will look at. Not that one person gets so much.
Do you think it's possible, though, that she could win? Do you think it's possible?
What?
Do you think it's possible that she could win? I mean,
no way. She doesn't have the ground game. He's got plenty of money. He's got big union support out there. He's got the Working Families Party. Believe me, when they start making their calls, they start putting up the ads. You know, you need $10 million to be competitive. And over the next couple of weeks, believe me, New York Times and everyone else is really going to examine her record because she talks a lot about her being a defense attorney, this and that. Well, now you're going to find out. I know my record. I did go to Tulia. I did get a rec. I did get an award from the NAACP, Amaril, for my work, the Tulia 46. For 3 years, I worked down there. I did get an award from the Madres de Plaza de Mayo in Argentina for my work helping them out and them coming up here and helping me out and working to raise them money. I did get an award from the Union Square Award, Drug Policy Alliance, for my work in the Rockefeller drug law movement. For 15 years, I've been out there. I've been arrested 12 times. So I want to see her record. Before you just cast a vote, you're going to have to take a look at her record, and her record is subject to analysis, not just by her saying it. First of all, she lied on the witness stand about her taxes. She said she was a New York resident, and yet she bought a car 2 years ago and said she was a Vermont resident to avoid paying taxes. Well, how responsible is that, to avoid paying insurance and taxes and let somebody else pay for it?
Well, all right, so let me ask you this. I mean, I have to admit that I didn't follow the court proceedings that carefully. But I mean, isn't it not the case that in this primary you could have, you know, 700,000 people vote? There's a lot of people who don't like Kathy Hochul. Her running mate.
That's a separate ballot line. Has nothing to do with the top line. She'll be running against Tim Wu on a separate ballot. It's like running for attorney general. Nothing to do with the governor's race.
But I'm talking about turnout, right? I mean,
yeah.
And there's, you know, we both know that Andrew Cuomo, there's no motivated Andrew Cuomo voters. Like, you know, the unions can talk about you got to go out and vote, and that's one thing in the general, but they can't bring every one of their members to the polls on primary day. And so it seems to me that there's a real, I mean, it's an outside
chance.
It's a no chance.
Listen, I'll tell you why. When people, you go to the black community here, do you think they want to risk Rob Astorino being the governor? If she wins, that makes it easier for Rob Astorino to be the next governor of this state. Because, and by the way, over the next couple of weeks, you know, the balloon's going to pop. Right now, I know reporters are really digging into her past. They were only digging into her residency before. Now she's going to have to verify all the claims she did as a defense attorney, all of these things that she claims she's done fighting corruption. I want to see it. I want to see it. I've heard her say it, but, you know, it's rhetoric, and I want to see substance here. If it's just rhetoric, then she definitely doesn't deserve to win. You can't go up there and lie to the, or not lie, but to inflate your resume to the public. I haven't heard anything specific from her, and she doesn't have a lot of passion.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I she seems pretty passionate to me. But all right, so in the event that, you know, she gets this scrutiny from the Times, and
from everybody. Everybody's now going to dig in, and you know, she better be on the level on everything.
But Randy, isn't that a sign that there's
taxes? I want to see her taxes.
Isn't that
she won't release her taxes?
Isn't that a sign that she's got a good shot? I mean, why would we be having this conversation about the scrutiny she's going to get unless there was some real thought out there that she might have a chance of knocking him off?
I don't think that's the reason why. No one thinks she has a shot. She gives 27, 28%. I'll do a lot better than people think because I'm out there door-to-door with 25 African-American ex-convicts in all the different projects in New York City over the next couple weeks as one thing. I'm in Buffalo. I'm in Rochester. She would not endorse. You know, I'll tell you something. She hates Andrew Cuomo so much. Then why didn't she say at the last debate with me that if she loses the primary, would she endorse Andrew Cuomo in the general election? She wouldn't say no, or she wouldn't even take a position. Still too early. I said I will support the Green Party candidate in the general election if I lose the primary. If she's against fracking, then she's got to say, she was at Frackers yesterday. I was at the Syracuse Fair with her, and she told a bunch of Frackers, I get in, I'm going to ban fracking. And I got up there and I said, look, if she's going to ban fracking, let's say she loses, she must endorse Howie Hawkins over here because he will ban fracking, but the governor won't. So why doesn't she come over here and tell you folks that? She's acting like a politician, that's why. I'm straight shooter, straight shooter.
Well, I mean, it's the same dynamic, though, right? You said some voters are going to come out because they're going to be afraid of Rob Astorino. And so, I mean, if they're right to be afraid of Rob Astorino, you know, maybe she is, too. I don't know. I mean, I'm just peppering it here because, I you know, like I say, I haven't cast my vote yet, and I want to know.
I don't care who wins. I'll be honest with you. The Democratic Party is a party of drone strikes right now. It's a party of an expanded war in Afghanistan. It's the party of ICE expelling millions of people out of this country. It's a party of Gitmo. At this point, it's a party of the NDAA. It's a party of H.R. 347. And should I go on, the prosecution of whistleblowers, that's what that this Democratic Party is. It's, and New York State hasn't changed in 150 years. They called them dough-faced Democrats back in the 1860s. Guys like Fernando Wood, who you saw in the Lincoln movie, the ones that were really conservative Democrats. It hasn't changed with the exception of FDR. You know, New York State really hasn't been, and maybe RFK, a state with real progressive Democrats.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Because it's the legacy of Tammany Hall. You know when it was at its most progressive is when Aaron Burr founded it in 1800, you know, or back then when he founded it. It was much more progressive in the early parts. And Van Buren was okay. And, you know, I mean, a Democrat didn't win the White House until Wilson between the Civil War and 1912. Nobody won, and they were all because the Democrats back then were part of the old Democratic Party, a Democratic machine in New York State. Tilden was a conservative Democrat who opposed the Civil War. Everyone talks about Samuel Tilden, but it was the Republicans back then who were good, who were progressive, you know. And everyone, of course, when you look back, and you can find some clay feet under any politician. But I would say that the New York State FDR was progressive to an extent. He had some good, a lot of pressure on the guy. But, you know, Ed Koch, not Mario Cuomo, you take a look at his real record. He built 37 prisons when he was there. 37 prisons, okay? His father, Andrew, built prisons. Zephyr Teachout's mother is a judge who puts people in prison, and there was a judge who put my father in prison for 10 years. So we come from three different discrete backgrounds. You know, I come from working class roots. The other two come from more of the establishment roots.
All right. Well, listen. So, Randy, give us. Where are you going to be over the next couple of weeks? And where can people get more information? I know tomorrow you're going to be in Staten Island, right?
I'm going to be in Staten Island. Then I'm going to be in the Bronx. I'll be in Staten Island. Sunday, I think I'll be in Buffalo. Monday, I'll be in New Paltz because New Paltz SUNY opens up, where, you know, I want complete free college education. I got one in California, went to the state college, didn't cost me a nickel. And then Monday, I forgot where I am. Monday, no, that's where I am. Monday. And then Tuesday, I'll be debating her and others at the Bay Terrace Jewish Community Center, a beautiful place. And they
is that going to be online? I mean, can we watch some of these debates?
You know, I think you can. I mean, this is a debate that's going to be. There's going to be some debates down the road here. I got such a crowded schedule. If you were to go to my website, you can find what's happening. I mean, I had a great day yesterday up at the Syracuse Fair. You know, I hounded Astorino, and those photos got in. I was up there all over the map, and I'm aggressive. I'm in your face. I'm a, you know, honest. I'm not a politician. That's the thing. I am not. I'm Diogenes, looking for an honest politician. And so if you go to Credico2014.com, you can find out how to reach me. You can find out how to access where the next debate or, you know, where the next forum is. We had one the other day in Hastings. You know it was in Hastings, don't you? The Wizard of Oz, Frank Morgan, was born there. And it was a perfect metaphor for Cuomo, who, of course, has somebody behind the strings pulling the stuff, and that behind the curtain pulling the strings, and that would be Al D'Amato and all these other rich, corrupt donors and bundlers.
All right, well,
Frank Morgan.
It's Credico numerals 2014.com. We'll put that on the website. Randy, I appreciate your coming on. I'm going
to
think about
it. I made my case here.
Yeah.
It's like trying to get off of the death penalty here. You know, you're a tough judge. You know, if you vote for me, you're voting for giving a voice to the most vulnerable people in our society. The most vulnerable people in our society. And I just want to say one last deal. The other day when I did debate her, Zephyr, and Cuomo's surrogate, he had a surrogate, their district leader, up in Hastings. He made a statement. I mean, he read a seven-minute statement, got up, and said, "I got to go now. I have my dog that I travel with, a little Coton Tuileur. She bit the guy in the leg." And the New York Times caught that, and it, there are photographs of the dog biting the guy in the leg. It was so perfect. I mean, there was a photographer on the ground following my dog around to begin with, and when she took a chunk out of this guy's leg and he kind of like, you know, the Times guy yesterday called me up and said, "What's the name of that dog?" So I'm expecting a dog story very soon.
Well, and you got to put a picture of that dog on your site, man.
What's that?
I'm looking at your site right now. I don't see a picture of the dog. You got to get the dog up there.
The dog's going to be up there. There's a video. I put it on New York One News the other day, actually Time Warner Cable out of Albany, Capital Tonight with Liz Benjamin, and the dog did the show with me. So you can see her there. We will put the dog on the screen, a huge dog, when this story comes out. She's actually going to do an ad for me. The dog's going to do, you remember that ad by Dante de Blasio?
Yes.
Yes. Well, my dog's going to be barking into the screen why she loves and why she's voting for Randy Credico, and she would do it even if I weren't her best friend. So we're going to do a takeoff of that with the dog.
Good. I like that's it.
That's coming up.
All right, yes. Randy. Well, good luck, and thanks for
thank you for
touching
the time. Thank you for the time. I hope I got myself a vote, Judge.
Well,
Judge Cedar.
I'm not quite there yet, but I got to wait. I still got a
all
couple
right
more weeks. All right, appreciate
all right, buddy
it. All right,
bye.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Randy Credico, folks, running for governor in New York State. And, you know, this is a really important primary. And so get out there. I mean, if you're in New York State, and obviously I think we'll probably have Zephyr Teach out on if she has time over the next couple of weeks to come back on one more time, because, you know, Cuomo the lesser, folks. Cuomo the lesser. All right. What are we doing? A freebie Friday? I guess we're going to.
Well, right?
I guess we will.
Didn't see any. I'll do one last check while we continue on, but I didn't see any Jimmy song.
No Jimmy Reefer Cake song?
No, I guess maybe he's on vacation.
Yeah, it's possible. Should we do a random rush? We haven't done one in a while. And, you know, this is what goes on in the funner half of the program. And a lot of our freebies don't ever get a chance to hear it. What do you think?
Let's do it. Random rush.
All right. See, it's special. Wow.
Okay.
I don't know what to say about that. I guess you're really excited about it.
Yeah.
All right. Good joke.
Let's see.
Funny at first. Now not.
Let's see if we can get this. Will you turn up my thing here and see if...
You're up. You're up, buddy.
Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe we can't.
You're up, pal.
I don't either, but...
But, you know, I will hunt them down for my
$5. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't sound like much. Can they change the thing on you again? They always do that.
Can a reporter
contact you? Well, a lot of times they...
And I said, yeah. I said if it could be a non...
I don't know who that is.
The app we use always seems to change the channels.
I don't know what is going on now. Wow, this is great stuff.
Yeah,
people
folks,
really must be really...
This is what you miss in the better half.
This is what you're missing out on. Confusion as
All right, come on.
All right.
It appears that they no longer carry him on that
station.
They
changed.
I was trying to give Michael some props. I was going to say he does a number of right wing impressions. Maybe he can give us his own little bit of random rush.
You cannot find Rush. I wonder who has assembled your equipment.
I wonder if they've taken Rush Limbaugh off of this app.
If they have taken Rush off of the app.
We need
may
to
as well.
Okay,
just
there
put
we go. All right. All right, it's time for Random Rush. You know what that means. I listen to Rush Limbaugh randomly for 60 seconds, and I respond in 90. It is now 12:13 p.m. East Coast time. He's just started his show, I guess, so let's check it out.
They don't become the same problem that we're currently having in the Middle East. There'll be terrorists a generation from now. And this is... Remember now, AP says immigration is a non-factor. It's just amazing how it's disappeared. It has nothing to do and will have nothing to do with the House races in November. And now this guy, a state representative in Iowa, Pat Murphy, seeking a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. So we better grant these kids amnesty, because if we don't, what he's essentially saying is, if we don't grant them amnesty, they're going to get so mad, they're going to become terrorists. And we don't want them to become terrorists. We don't. So we better give them health care, and we better give them citizenship, and we better give them welfare, and we better take care of them like they're our own children and like they are our own grandchildren. Otherwise, they're going to become terrorists. You think I'm making this up now? We have... This is certifiable proof that Democrats, some Democrats in Iowa, are insane.
All right, there's Rush Limbaugh talking about immigration. Now, I don't know what he's referring to here specifically, but Rush Limbaugh has been arguing for a long time that any Republican that wants to grant asylum to these kids at the border who are seeking a refugee status, they are misguided because this is not going to affect politics. It's not going to hurt the Republican Party. Now, Rush Limbaugh is one of the only people who argues that somehow the Republican Party can be successful going forward in the future by denying the humanity of people simply because they're brown skinned. But that's not the reason. why we should grant asylum and teach these kids and show some respect to these kids who are showing up as refugees. Report from the LA Times. At least 10 kids who have been sent back, at least five, perhaps as many as 10 of 42 children slain in one Honduran city since February, had been recently deported from the U.S. These kids, this is a refugee crisis at the border. And then I don't know what Limbaugh was talking. Maybe he was talking about the Dream Act kids. These are kids who only know America as their home, who are productive citizens. There's no reason why they shouldn't be here, but for the fact that they're not the color Rush Limbaugh wants them to be. And his best argument about that is it won't have political implications for the Republicans. I think he's missing sort of one of the other central issues is that they're human beings. That's it. I went a little long. All right. Let's.
If kids get their throats slit upon return to Honduras, that won't affect a midterm election in Iowa.
Indeed.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. He's a horrible human being. Nefertiti, happy casual Shabbat and happy birthday tomorrow, Matt.
Thank you for remembering. Yes.
That's good. I forgot about it. I remembered 2 days ago. I didn't remember today. Give Matt a little birthday.
Thank you.
Got two sick kitty cats here, so too tired to have anything more substance to contribute. I did. Thank you, Nefer. Yorick, could they be counting the tear gas canisters which are picked up and thrown back as Molotov cocktails? It would be ironic, maybe. Tom from Western New York, I've been complaining for days to my family about the coverage of the Molotovs in Ferguson. MSNBC and CNN have mentioned Molotovs at every given opportunity without a shred of evidence. Not a single photo of a fire, not a second of footage. This is pure propaganda. Old media mocks the Fifth Estate at every given opportunity, but even MSNBC unequivocally makes shit up to suit a narrative. They're not making it up. They're just repeating what the police have told them and are being very careful not to question the police. Excuse me? The police don't even write a report on killing this guy, and we're giving them the benefit of the doubt? It should be police claim that Molotov cocktails were thrown, but we are unable to corroborate that claim. That's the way that you report, whether it's a claim from protesters or in any situation. Because if the protesters said police came in and fired live ammunition, but they didn't have any corroboration, that's the way that they would report. When it's reported that the police fire rubber bullets and wooden bullets and tear gas and use an LRAD, all corroborated. But I have not seen a single piece of corroboration either. I mean, that is what struck me about that.
Well, you see, Sam, the police are really good at stopping any of the media from seeing the Molotov cocktails, but they're just really bad at letting the media see when they are being, you know, saying, I'm going to fucking kill you and stuff like that. Well, that's got to be it. Of course.
And to protect the children.
Yes.
Crusher.
I can't add to that.
Man, Credico is mad about Teach Out. I got to say, I'm kind of shocked you told him you were voting for Teach Out. Not that you shouldn't have. I'm certainly going to, just because he was already so vitriolic going in. Well, I mean, look, I want to be honest. I mean, I'll know when I get to the polling. But right now, I am leaning towards Teach Out because I think whether or not she deserves the publicity that she got or not, whatever it is, I want there to be not just a big vote against Cuomo. I think there is a chance. I think it is very, very outside chance. But you remember, you're talking about 700,000 people who are going to vote, maybe less. 700,000, maybe less. And it's, you know, Randy's predicting maybe she gets 25% of the vote. You're talking 150,000, 175,000. Well, maybe, you know, who knows? Who knows? What if turnout is 600,000, 500,000? Because her percentage of the vote is fixed. I mean, the number of people who are going to vote for her, I think, is pretty fixed. Like, I think a lot, there's a much higher percentage of her voters, and Randy's probably, that are going to go vote no matter what. Andrew Cuomo's support, broad, but not deep. End of. Am I the only progressive on earth who sees Michael Brown's shoplifting footage as relevant? Nothing justifies his death in this case, and any sane society would hold that police officer responsible. However, the sheer aggression Brown exhibits leaving that shop does, in fact, shed quite a bit of gray on the supposedly one-sided encounter a few minutes later. First of all, it wasn't a few minutes later.
It was hours later. At least several hours later.
But and the police, the exact time, and the police did not.
This guy Darren Wilson, when he approached them for walking in the middle of the street, he was unaware that there was a robbery that occurred. Right. He was not approaching them knowing that they could possibly have been the suspects. It was just it's irrelevant in that sense for sure. I don't know what.
There's also why. I'm trying to address his point, but I mean you okay, can go ahead. But I was trying to.
Well, I think what Endov is saying is that this gives us a sense of who Michael Brown was, and that may be the case. He may have been a guy who is, you know, aggressive or.
There's one really clear bottom line here. To me. And that is two headshots. In the autopsy report, there are two headshots. That means that there are shots that are fired clearly after someone is completely incapacitated and you're killing them. That to me is really fundamental.
There were four other shots that all hit him in the arm in some fashion.
They all hit him in the arm. And then even that, if you're going to say, like, I mean, Lawrence O'Donnell did a great breakdown of this piece in the Times.
All of the evidence that we have, legitimate evidence, says that he was not. It may be that this guy is a very aggressive guy. He may get in bar fights every night. Right. He may be beating people, kicking puppies. The bottom line is that all evidence points to the fact that this cop had no reason to fear bodily harm from Michael Brown and continued to shoot him.
Well, right. That's exactly the point.
Even when you look at just when they released that video footage, I mean, if they felt it was relevant on its own merit, they would have released it on its own, not when they also released his name to try to make that become the story and not the cop's name.
I don't
name.
Know if he's familiar with, was it Amadou Diallo? I mean, it was a 1990s case where a black man was shot, I think, like actually 41 times.
Right.
And they released his juvenile record. And Giuliani said he was no choir boy.
Right.
Like, this has a very, very long history. And if you can't see the context, people don't have to be perfect human beings.
Let me just finish this.
Killed by police.
I have to add that due to my own background, short Sephardic people, shopkeep stock, if not actual shopkeeps, watching that footage, I had an immediate and visceral identification with the harassed convenience store employee that might be coloring how I look at this. I mean, look, Michael Brown does not have to be a good guy to deserve not to be shot by the police. That's the bottom line. Scanner. Wow, great show. I'm a Scot who lives in London and have never heard of Randy, but he's a gripping radio. Bill, I challenge Binder to a cage match.
I don't know what that means.
I've been challenging random conservative pundits online to fight me in a cage.
Oh, wow.
And and from Todd Starnes to Chuck C. Johnson
anybody
to Sean Hannity, I think they'll just block me.
Dr. Radmanthes, hi, Sam. I assume you know who Lanny Davis is. Oh, my God.
What?
Of course I know who Lanny Davis is. He's probably one of the most odious individuals that – if honestly, if you said – if someone came up to me and said, who's the slimiest guy in politics, I would say Lanny Davis. He's a big-time Washington lobby, represented some of the foulest dictatorships in Africa and Latin America. I was reminded of him when you interviewed Melanie Sloan of Crew a few weeks ago on Ring of Fire. Yes, Sloan accepted a job with Davis's lobbying firm in 2010, only to back out 2 months later after receiving a shitstorm of criticism. Yes, I was. I remember that distinctly. But my knowledge, she never said there was anything wrong or questionable about working for Lanny Davis, calling him a wonderful person. Is there something I'm missing here? No, I never figured that out either. She is no longer. I think she stepped down from Crew. Should my trust be restored in Melanie Sloan as a critic of corruption for some reason? Or does she still need to be asked some hard questions about whether she repudiates Davis' lies for dictators and plutocrats? I mean, I think, like, look, I was never able to explain that. And I think that hurt the organization, too. I think I agree with you. Little gray. Randy Credico reminded me of a lot of the sort of feisty and unapologetic comments made by the late, great Al Lewis back when he made his own twisting at windmills bid for the New York governor's office. Muggity T. Jones, I guess tasers are only used at college parties when you're drunk now. Movie recommendation, 20-minute Vice documentary, The Business of War Special Effects. It isn't about the domestic militarization, but how the U.S. finances militarization of the world. It's a mall of weapons that the news labels U.S. enemies. Cheney and Bush's, I'm going to be a TYT intern. Congratulations. I'll be in the new marketing wing promoting TYT network shows, including the mother effing Majority Report.
Wow, nice.
I love it.
Give him a round of applause. Plug him everything.
That's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations.
Now what you do is you just happen to push us more than anybody else. That's just,
I was going
to
say, I hope the thumb hits the scales when you're...
And I hope the thumb doesn't hit the scales on some other TYT shows.
PhD Kempist. As long as you're interviewing gubernatorial candidates, I want to suggest you look into Don Berwick in Massachusetts. I would love to. Berwick.
Don Berwick, if it's worth his while, but he's a real – that guy could win.
Yeah, I mean –
He's a real candidate there. Everybody
that may be something I'll do on Ring of Fire. I mean, we have I think as a function of – maybe Air America days, we have a much bigger New York audience than we do Massachusetts audience. And I'm not sure that it's, as a candidate, it's worth his while. But I've wanted to interview him for a long time, actually. He is one of his challenges, Martha Coakley. Yes, I know.
Martha Coakley, dude. She's trying again. I mean, in a certain sense, like, I feel bad for her.
Eponymous. Michael, I think the way to do a Sam imitation is to play up the authoritarian side of many of his past characters. He might have a suppressed right-wing personality that comes out in moments of progressive self-doubt.
Oh, you mean like Deuce?
You should show how flaccid his stated principles are simply by portraying the complete transformation that occurs when he simply dons a police uniform and starts giving out tickets for chewing gum. Ben Stimes Bonair. Did you hear the Affluenza's kid got booked for impersonating a police officer? I did hear that.
The Affluenza kid's father.
Father, yeah. Also, could that movie Let's Be Cops have had a worse time to come out? I'm not familiar with it, but...
Yeah, a movie called Let's Be Cops came out the same
That movie what didn't, is it? Didn't what have is like about? A great time to come out at any point.
Yeah.
It looks terrible.
I don't know.
But I get what you're saying.
Bingo Mosquito. Did you get a chance to listen to Murray Roman Link about riots? I check email. Yes, I did, actually. I got to listen again. But I think I got too distracted by the music behind it. The dated music background is funnier now than the jokes probably once were. Yes. But it was very interesting just to hear that. There was a lot of, like, he had this joke about, well, I don't know. It's really not, it just seems, it seems a little bit dated in PC, but he was talking about, you know, the potential of riots in St. Louis, and that it's very much about just ongoing frustration. Then we should just get some bread, man, and Rypop Phil. There was a Molotov cocktail unexploded shown at a press conference in a champagne bottle. Sam, would you squeeze in Nan Rich on Monday? Pap would kill you. I don't even know what that is. Jeremo, 22. I asked myself, what would I do if a cop told me to get off the effing street? File a complaint real fast. A real professional policeman. Says Jeremo. Oh, to the Maddox. Have you covered this right wing who pushed the stock CT scan on his webpage as an actual CT scan of the officer's face? They claimed he had a fractured eye socket, and then this guy posts a picture of a fractured eye socket and says, University of Iowa on the original Gateway Pundit. Unbelievable. Slappy hack, I haven't. I'll do that next week. Been a great week of shows as a black listener. I've appreciated hearing black voices during a very tough month. I must say it's been exhausting to listen to so many voices expressing reasons why I'm a threat to my fellow citizens and a target of the police just because of their prejudice. Keep up the great work. Have a fantastic weekend. Oh, did you get a chance to watch The Secret Government over your break? I didn't.
I put that on the list.
Charlie, I emailed you evidence of Molotovs.
The only thing I saw was a reporter, I can't remember who, posted a photo of, this is the only, he said something like, this is the only Molotov I've seen.
230.
And it was someone who was trying to light something, and the reporter said that it was never lit at all. Like, they couldn't light it, whatever it was. And he believed it was a Molotov, but it was never thrown, it was never lit.
All right, I'm looking at this video at 2:30. Video will start in 3 seconds. I got to get going, too. Hold on, let's see. Yes, but I also want to see this. He says at 2:30, there's supposedly... All right, I see glasses and flashbang grenades. Oh, there's, yeah. There is one guy throwing them. I've seen it. I'm pretty sure. All right, fair enough. It definitely looks like one. A bottle lit at the bottom. All right, fair enough. As to dirt, Sam, I'm so sick and tired of Christian family values, Republicans, and the constant disregard for these refugee children from Central America. They really have no moral conscience. Isn't it amazing that liberals are the people showing empathy? Pirates of Destiny. Don't know if the following film has been recognized, but Sin Nombre is a must, a stunning, horrifying depiction of a young girl trying to escape violence in Guatemala.
How does it spell?
S-I-N Nombre. And the final I am of the week. Milton Apathy, the other shooting will probably be ruled a proper shooting. Those guys were very, very, very inexperienced and stupid, but their PD will back them. A regular beat officer would have known that guy was a mental PT and probably would not have shot him. Indeed. All right, folks. Matt and Mike on Monday. I'll be back Tuesday. As we... our final week of summer next week. See you then.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.